Welcome to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. Tonight, the Rainbow Honor Walk, and later, the queer past becomes present. They appeared just a month ago, a little over a month ago, actually, on the sidewalks of Castro Street, the heart of San Francisco's world-famous gay neighborhood. There are 20 of them now. Bronze plaques honoring labor leader Harry Hay, lesbian politics pioneer Del Martin, disco diva Sylvester, and other LGBT heroes. And there are plans for scores more, leading all the way from Castro Street down Market to the LGBT Community Center at Octavia Street. The co-founder and co-creator of the Rainbow Honor Walk and well-known PR and communications man about town is here to tell us about the inspiration and vision behind it. David Perry, welcome to Out in the Bay.
Well, thanks for having me on the air. It's great to see you, Eric.
Likewise. David, you've been talking about this Rainbow Honor Walk since, I think, about the time since I first met you, almost 2 decades.
20 years, actually. The first time anyone heard about the Rainbow Honor Walk was in 1994. And as you recall, those were what I like to call the depths of the AIDS-HIV years. It was impossible to walk the Castro without seeing the impact of the AIDS-HIV pandemic on that neighborhood. And I remember one day just walking that walk and thinking, this neighborhood's going to change one day. Will people know the contributions that the LGBT community made to this community, to this city? And it popped into my head, what we need is, for all intents and purposes, a walk of fame. And for the last 20 years, I've talked about it. And 4 years ago, another Castro businessman, Isaac Lindenauer, had a similar idea. And so we joined forces. And the result is what you see now in bronze on the streets of Castro, the Rainbow Honor Walk.
Now, I'm just curious about that. Isaac Lindenauer, you kind of both independently of each other happened to have the same similar idea?
Yeah, I mean, great minds think alike. I remember 20 years ago when I had the idea, it got some support. We had some press on it. We actually presented it to the Board of Supervisors. Then Bevan Dufty talked about it. And we promised then this should be something that the community would be behind, that we would raise money for it. And very rightly so, back in the early, mid-90s, people were raising money to keep people alive.
Right, exactly.
So I remember Bevan said something to me that I never forgot. He said, David, it's a good idea. But like the rainbow flag, it needs to be something the community picks up and carries. Keep on keeping on. And one day the community will be ready for this idea. So 20 years later, just keep pushing and keep talking, it came to be. And what I want to stress is it came to be with private support, or no paid staff, an all-volunteer board, and we raised every penny for the construction of these plaques privately.
That's, and you must be really thrilled. The first 20 of them are now up after all this time.
I'm pretty happy, I have to say.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're all enjoying them and seeing them. So what are you trying to what do you hope people get from, now that they're out there seeing them, what do you hope people are getting from this? I mean, tourists and residents alike.
Yeah, well, I mean, you and I have been in San Francisco a long time, and it seems impossible to believe that maybe someone could walk the Castro and not know that this was a quote-unquote gay neighborhood, that this was the neighborhood that gave birth to Harvey Milk, that this is where members of ACT UP laid in the street and said, we're not going quietly, silence equals death. This was where we celebrated the election of the first American president who actually said the word gay. The Castro, like the rest of San Francisco, is changing. And I feel, and I think a lot of people feel, that history is important. What is it they say on the archives? Those who do not learn from history are condemned to repeat it in all the bad ways, or whatever the paraphrase is. So my hope is, and our hope as a board, is that people will see these plaques. See the faces. As Armistead Maupin said, the proud, outwardly gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender faces of these people and say, wow, I didn't know that Frida Kahlo was bisexual. I didn't know that Alan Turing, the father of the modern computer, was gay. I didn't know Randy Schultz was gay. I didn't know that Christine Jorgensen was the first real celebrated member of the transgender community. So I'm hoping that they will see.
Yeah, way back in 1950s?
It was the 50s.
60s?
Yeah, it was a big deal.
Yeah.
So our hope is that people will look at these plaques, especially non-gay people from my perspective, and learn something and get just enough information from the text on those plaques to Google it, go online and learn more about these people that really have helped all of us who are openly LGBT walk the walk without fear.
Mm-hmm. So the walk of fame, not the walk of shame.
No, not the walk. You know, it's funny. About the time that we codified the name, the Rainbow Honor Walk, I got a very polite but very direct letter from the president of the Hollywood Walk of Fame, who in the first paragraph said, what a great idea. Keep going. It's a great idea. But also, I do want to remind you that the phrase Walk of Fame is trademarked.
Right.
Although I may colloquially refer to it as that, its official name is the Rainbow Honor Walk. There is only one Walk of Fame, and Evidently Hollywood has it.
Hollywood has it all wrapped up. So tell us about the first 20 past heroes honored with plaques.
Yeah, I mean, we've worked on it for the last 3 years. Our all-volunteer group representative of the LGBT community here in San Francisco. When we wanted 20 names that were reflective of the whole community, and first we had to come up with criteria. So the criteria for the first 20 were all self-expressed members of the LGBT community. For instance, people said, well, what about Walt Whitman? Mm-hmm. What about Sappho? Well, back in ancient Greece, who knows what gay or lesbian was? Sappho never stood up and said, I'm lesbian. Walt Whitman never stood up and said, I'm gay. These first 20 honorees, which some of them are over 120, 130, 40 years ago, these are people who stood up and said, I am gay, I'm lesbian, I'm bisexual, I'm transgender. They were all leaders in their field. They're reflective of the diversity of our community, and they're all deceased. So no one lobbied for any of these people.
Right, right. And they're not all San Franciscans at all by any stretch. They're from all over the country, at least.
No, they're international. We have Oscar Wilde. We have Jane Addams, the first American woman to win a Nobel Prize. We have James Baldwin. You have George Choi, a local boy, young man who died from AIDS, an Asian American Pacific Islander activist. You have Keith Haring. You have Gertrude Stein and people like Alan Turing, and even one of the ones that I'm very fond of, Federico Garcia Lorca, openly gay playwright and activist during the Spanish Civil War, who was murdered because he opposed the fascist forces of Francisco Franco, the Spanish dictator.
I didn't know that he was openly gay. I knew that
yep.
he was gay. Well,
absolutely.
Yeah, there you go. See, I learned something too. This is great. So tell us about the very first plaque you said was Sylvester.
Yeah, I mean, we wanted to make sure we got it right, so we had a test plaque. We had an international design competition. There were over 21 entries from around the world, and we wanted the first plaque to be something that everyone could resonate around, and Sylvester was kind of easy. I mean, he's a local musician, a local icon, African-American member of the gender-bending community. I mean, everyone said, wow, it's got to be Sylvester. So the first plaque we did was Sylvester, and the first one that was actually laid in concrete as part of the whole Castro streetscape improvement was Alan Turing.
Okay, so I'm going to talk about the streetscape improvement in a moment. But for folks who – some of you – I mean, a lot of people hopefully listening to the show know who Sylvester was. They know You Make Me Feel Mighty Real.
How
and they
you
know,
not know who Sylvester is? You've got to turn your
well,
gay card.
Yeah, well, but, you know, there's a lot of non-gay people who listen to this show, believe it or not. And the Mighty Real, you know, You Make Me Feel Mighty Real. But we're going to play a little more obscure one. This is Sylvester's version of Cry Me a River.
Oh, I got it.
That is Sylvester, not playing Mighty Real or Do You Want to Funk With Me?
No,
Sylvester's version of Cry Me a River.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, everything that Sylvester did, whether it was, quote unquote, a ballad like Cry Me a River made you want to rip your T-shirt off and hit the disco.
Yeah, you know,
dance
I didn't
floor.
Realize how danceable this was, actually.
Everything's dance. I mean, Sylvester.
Well, he has a couple slow ones, but yeah, pretty much they're all danceable.
I do wonder how many gay men came out because they heard Sylvester for the first time and ran to the dance floor. I mean,
so Sylvester is the first plaque of 20.
Right,
so
and then
far.
We've got some other people like.
In the Rainbow Honor
A famous Japanese playwright and poet, actor, film director Yukio Mishima came out during the war years. One of the people that really fascinates me is Bayard Rustin, African-American activist and someone that really took a lot of heat for being openly gay. I mean, this was a confidant and close friend of Martin Luther King Jr. Bayard Rustin was the person who planned the March on Washington in 1963. I mean, imagine being an openly gay black man in the South in 1963. I mean, this is the man who worked for civil rights across so many boundaries. Tennessee Williams, incredible playwright. Virginia Woolf, English novelist, member of the Bloomsbury Group. And someone else who really has gotten a lot of attention, especially as a local person, Del Martin. And of course, Del Martin and Phyllis Lyon were the first same-sex couple legally married in California. And it was very moving.
And illegally married. The first time around, the first same-sex couple. It wasn't illegal at the time.
You're exactly
well,
right.
It was questionably legal.
It was questionable. It was like Gavin said it's legal, then it came back, and right. But Del and Phyllis, of course, legends in the lesbian community. And Phyllis was actually there to unveil her late wife's plaque right there on 19th Street in front of Spikes and Castor Winery, along with Kate Kendall, the director of the Center for Lesbian Rights. That was really moving. Armistead Maupin and his husband, Chris Turner, unveiled Virginia Woolf. Mm. So it was that day was really something, and I really appreciate the Department of Public Works and the contractors in the city giving us our little moment in the sun, because now the whole rest of the Castor Streetscape project is going to be unveiled.
So I wanted to ask you about that, too. So how do you tie the Rainbow Honor Walk in with this plan that's been going on for months now? I'm sure all the local merchants are like, when's this going to end?
Yeah.
I just saw the headline in the BAR today. Well, now Halloween's the new deadline. It was going to be Castor Street Fair, but the Rainbow crosswalks look pretty
They're in.
Fabulous.
I have to admit, I'll come out of the closet and say I was a bit nervous about the rainbow crosswalks. I thought they just might be too much. They look really great. I saw them today. The short answer is luck. I mean, we've been planning the Rainbow Honor Walk for 20 years, and every year our plan is to unveil 20. Eventually, the Rainbow Honor Walk will stretch from Octavia and Market down by the LGBT Center up both sides of Market to Castro. It's already filled the first two blocks of Castro. It'll go down 18th, and it'll go down 19th in front of Harvey Milk School. So when we started planning it, about a year ago, we realized, well, we've got the design ready, but they're going to be digging up the Castro to make it look pretty. Why don't we just wait and put it all in at one time? So it was just serendipitous, the timing, that we're able to unveil the history plaques that are coming up this Friday, the Castro CBD, the beautiful new streetscape, the new lighting. And one of the virtues of the new streetscape is each of the Rainbow Honor Walk plaques will have a special light. So you can see them in the day and you can see them at night, too.
Great. Because I was wondering about that as I was walking around taking pictures today, some in the shade and some in the shadows. Some in the shadows and some in the sun.
Yeah.
Quite different. You're hearing Out in the Bay, by the way. I'm Eric Jansen. My guest is David Perry, PR maven extraordinaire and co-founder of the Rainbow Honor Walk, plaques embedded in the sidewalks of San Francisco's Castro District honoring LGBT heroes. The first 20 of them were unveiled in September. And you mentioned 20 a year is your plan.
Yeah.
So who's next? Do you have people on the list already? How does that process
work? Yeah, well, that's an interesting question. I mean, I joke that all the gray hairs I have came from narrowing down the 100 and almost 200 submissions down to 20. For the next few months, the board is going to get together and listen to input from people. Hopefully, people listening to this radio show will go to our Facebook page, go to our website, rainbowhonorwalk.org. Let us know what they think the criteria should be for the next 20. Then we'll meet, we'll discuss, we'll decide what that criteria is. We'll put forth another list of 20 and raise the money for it. Each of the plaques costs about $5,000 to manufacture. It's a local manufacturer, Musi Artworks of Berkeley. They did a great job. But we are paying for this. When people say, did my tax dollars pay for this? No, your tax-deductible donations paid for it. And if you think that putting history in concrete and in bronze is important for a new generation of people to learn about the LGBT experience, please go to our website and donate, because we got to raise all this money privately.
Mm-hmm. Let's pick another name or two out of here. Well, can you tell me any of the names on the long list? The people that Is the criteria the same? Do they have to be someone who's dead and self-proclaimed? And that will be the case for the hundred or so that you might have to do to get all the way out of Davis Street.
The short answer is we don't know. We're going to see what the next criteria is. The first 20 were self-expressed, openly gay, leaders in their field, deceased. Don't know what the next 20 criteria will be. I do know that someone who was certainly on the first list that caused a little bit of controversy that they didn't make it onto the first 20 was Harvey Milk. Mm. And I remember thinking, well, of course Harvey is going to be in the first 20. And I remember we had a really deep and meaningful meeting as the board of community leaders. What would Harvey do? And someone said, well, Harvey's got a school and Harvey's got a muni station. And frankly, actually, Harvey has a plaque
right now
in front of his old camera shop.
Right.
What would Harvey want? And we decided that actually Harvey would want maybe someone else to be there for the first 20.
Right.
There were a lot of wonderful people. We had a list of, as I could be exactly wrong, but I think it was like 173, 175 people that fit the criteria. And we had to narrow that down to 20. And the thing that I've been most pleased about is I haven't heard anyone say, wow, these first 20, I don't think any of them should be here. We've been really gratified to see that people have responded to the names. And one of the construction workers, I assume, a young straight man who was putting in the Alan Turing plaque that day, read it and he went, I didn't know he was gay. And what happened to him? And I said, well, actually, he helped win World War II for the Allies. He cracked the Nazi Enigma code and enabled us to defeat Hitler's Germany. And they said, oh, well, what happened to him after that? It's like, well, he wouldn't go in the closet. He refused to deny that he was gay. And so the British government forcefully chemically castrated him.
Right.
And
right.
He was so devastated by the experience, he committed suicide.
Right.
And this young straight construction worker just looked at me like, wow, people do that? And
people
so I thought,
this is
a teachable moment.
Right.
He
right.
learned something here, and mm-hmm. that to me is the whole reason for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. Tell me a little bit about your journey here. You grew up in Virginia?
I did. My family came over in the 1600s. I'm about as white bread as you can get in this country. And I realized at an early age I was gay. I went to Catholic military school, went to college in upstate New York, and came to San Francisco in 1986. My first day in San Francisco actually was Castro Street Fair in 1986. And I remember thinking, this is where I want to live. And of course, the late 80s, early 90s were the time when we were all looking to help people living with AIDS and HIV. So I started doing volunteer work, worked for a number of AIDS, HIV service organizations, volunteered, and then started my own public relations firm in the 90s and have gone on from there. So and now also, you have a radio show. I actually am the host of 10%. It's the longest-running LGBT TV show in California state history. We're actually about to tape our 250th original show.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Great. I don't count the shows. I've count the years. We're at year 10 now. We're this month, October. Actually, the first Thursday in October 2004 is when we went on the air.
Happy birthday.
And as a matter of fact, since this is a perfect opportunity, thanks for letting me mention this. The first episode, we had an interview that I did with the late Trevor Haley, who used to lead Cruising the Castro walking tour. And it's on our website on the Plain Favorites page.
I'm going to put a link on that to the Rainbow Honor Walk because I tell you, the Rainbow Honor Walk would not be here without Trevor. Her successor, Kathy Amendola, wonderful person who leads the Castor Walking Tours, she's on our board, but she's been such a supporter at every level, financially, philosophically, spiritually. And I remember when I had the idea for the Rainbow Honor Walk 20 years ago, one of the first people I mentioned it to was Trevor, fellow Southerner. I think she's from Mississippi. I'm from Richmond. And I saw her, and in that kind of gruff drawl of her, she said, this is a great idea, you know, and people are going to come from around the world to see it. And I just hope that Trevor is smiling down and pleased that now we've got the Rainbow Honor Walk and that's one of the things that her successor, Kathy, is showing people on the Castro tours.
That's great. And I'm glad she's still doing the tours.
Oh, yeah. They're hugely popular.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of other tours. Well, I see so many tours around. I don't know if they're all part of hers because I don't see her actually leading them. And I know there's various little businesses that have started up. Some of them are humorous and... but there's all kinds
Well, did you ever really think the Castro would be a tourist attraction? I have to admit, I didn't.
Well, you know, this is another question.
It.
Some people have complained about the rainbow crosswalks, for example. I don't think they've said this. I haven't heard people say this about the plaque. relax, but, oh, it's turning into this Disneyland thing.
Listen, you know, as my grandmother used to say, if ifs and buts were candies and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas. I think anything that brings people into a locally owned mom and mom or pop and pop business, of which there are a lot in the Castro, that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. We live in a society which functions on an economy, which means people have to buy things. So people coming to the Castro to buy things, and while they're walking out of Cliffs or walking into the HRC store or what have you, they see one of these history plaques or they see the Rainbow Honor Walk plaque and learn something. I think that's a great thing.
Yeah.
But I tend to be an optimist. I don't think it's become Disneyland. Anyone who lives in the Castro, as I have for almost 30 years, knows that it's not Disneyland. It's a real community. It's a real community of people who live and love there, and I don't think we're going to lose that.
Do you think the How do you see the gay flavor? It seems like changing. It seems like the concentration is going away, and a lot of people are sort of mourning that.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I can't imagine in my lifetime anyone walking into the Castro and not knowing that this was way gay. But also, I can't imagine anyone walking into any restaurant in San Francisco and not understanding that for those of us who espouse San Francisco values, equality is something that really is broad. So you'll see a same-sex couple. You'll see a member of the transgender community. You'll see someone that's openly bisexual. You know, I think that the definition of what it is to be gay, frankly, is more inclusive all the time. So I don't see the Castro losing its edge. I see, if anything, the Castro becoming more inclusive. And I really kiss the ground every day for our straight allies. I'm not upset when I see straight people in the Castro. I'm upset when I hear about other countries in the world that behead people because they're gay.
Yeah.
I'm upset when I hear that, you know, Putin's Russia is, you know, a hideous example of how a European country has been hijacked by a homophobe. That upsets me. But when I hear that straight people are moving and living in the Castro, I'm like, great, they know we have good taste.
David Perry, thank you so much. David Perry is a co-founder and a co-creator of the Rainbow Honor Walk. And where can people find out more?
RainbowHonorWalk.org. You can get info, and more importantly, please contribute. I got to fund another 20 plaques.
Understandably. While you're in the Castro checking out the Rainbow Honor Walk, drop into the GLBT History Museum. It's on 18th Street in the first block up from Castro Street. Stephen Short of KALW's Cross Currents created this feature on the current Queer Past Becomes Present exhibit.
So what I like about this is that it's the authentic artifact. So the camera girl would come around, take the tourist picture with a drag queen, and then present it to them.
Jim Van Buskirk is a curator at the Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual History Museum. He's showing me a picture frame. It's made of heavy gray cardboard with a slight border around the opening. You know, the type of thing people still purchase in some resort restaurants or after an adventure, such as skydiving.
So you could take it home and show your friends, or not show your friends, as the case may be.
This particular picture frame is from Finocchio's,
which was world-renowned as a nightclub featuring female impersonators.
Falling in love again, never wanted to.
This was in the 40s, 50s, 60s. It closed actually in the late 90s because the neighborhood changed.
The neighborhood he's talking about isn't San Francisco's famously gay Castro district. These encounters with real live drag queens took place in North Beach when it was one of the neighborhoods that catered to queer communities. Back then, the Castro was simply the name of a grand movie theater located in the middle of a conservative Irish Catholic neighborhood called Eureka Valley. That artifact from Finocchio's is in the Gayberhood display, which Van Buskirk curated. It's one of eight sections within the Queer Past Becomes Present exhibit.
And what I wanted to do there is look at three distinct neighborhoods in San Francisco that once had vibrant queer communities that no longer exist.
Another seemingly simple item is an old door key, also from North Beach.
This is one of my favorite objects. This is the key to the Black Cat Cafe, which was a bohemian bar. So this is before gay identity really established itself. It was known as a hangout for writers, artists, people who were somehow different, but not necessarily exclusively homosexual.
So hello, hello, everybody. We all welcome you. The Black Cat welcomes you.
attracted this different crowd was performer Jose Saria. He sang show tunes, opera arias, and original songs while extravagantly dressed as a woman.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And once again, I welcome you on behalf of the working staff of the Black Cat, the most famous bohemian bar in the world.
Such behavior hardly earns a second look today, at least in some parts of San Francisco. But half a century ago, when Saria was doing it, it was enough to get you arrested. The charge? Female impersonation. There were 30 gay bars in San Francisco in 1963, but proprietors and patrons were constantly on edge because of coordinated police raids. By the following year, only 18 such bars remained. But a proper queen doesn't gather her skirts around her and go underground when facing persecution. Saria decided to attract much more attention by running for the County Board of Supervisors in 1961. That was well over a decade before Harvey Milk became the country's first openly gay elected official. One of Saria's slogans was, "United we stand, divided they catch us one by one."
People who think, oh, well, I know a lot about gay and lesbian history, I think are going to be excited and learn some things, because I know I learned a lot. For example, one of the exhibits I curated was on the Daughters of Bilitis, the lesbian organization founded in 1955.
The Daughters of Bilitis, named after a character in French novels with erotically explicit lesbian passages, was this country's first national lesbian organization. Founded in San Francisco by Del Martin and Phyllis Lyon, it started as a social circle, but soon took on the task of changing the public's attitude toward lesbianism. This was a radical step at a politically conservative time. Fear of communists infiltrating all levels of society prevailed, and any hint of undermining traditional American values was suspect. Jim Van Buskirk reads a passage from the Daughters of Bilitis display.
The Daughters of Bilitis' very establishment in the midst of witch hunts and police harassment was an act of courage, since members always had to fear that they were under attack, not because of what they did, but merely because of who they were. To me, that's chilling.
This pioneering organization wasn't in the Castro either. This early lesbian group was centered on Valencia Street, another of the nearly forgotten gayborhoods featured at the museum. There are few bold print names in these exhibits. These are everyday people who risked loss of employment, arrest, and physical violence, even death, just for the right to be who they are and love who they want. And as this museum likes to note, if you want to see a painting by Monet in a museum, there are over 50 places where you can do that, just in this country. But if you want to visit a brick-and-mortar museum of gay and lesbian history, there's only one, off Castro Street. In San Francisco's Castro District, I'm Stephen Short.
Stephen Short reports for KLW's news magazine Crosscurrents, on which that feature first aired. The Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, Transgender History Museum is at 4127 18th Street, just up from Castro Street in San Francisco, and is open every day of the week. Learn more at glbthistorymuseum.org. We'll also have a link on our website, outinthebay.org. You've been listening to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. Thanks tonight to Stephen Short and to David Perry, who was on earlier talking about the Rainbow Honor Walk. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the whole thing on our website, outinthebay.org. It should be up by 8 o'clock tonight. When you're there, you can also sign up for free podcasts, get the Stitcher app, and donate. Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Portola Valley are proud supporters of Out in the Bay, and they encourage you to join them. You can donate online at outinthebay.org. org, or write a check payable to Out in the Bay and mail it to Out in the Bay, care of KALW 500 Mansell Street, San Francisco, California, 94134. KALW very graciously donates studio time and airtime, and we appreciate it. Our engineer tonight is Joanne Marr. I'm Eric Jansen. Thank you so much for listening. Have a good night. Thank you.